I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. DOCSA, the Documentary Film Festival, begins this week, the 2nd through the 11th of May. Joining me now to preview its 13th year is its program director, Dorothy Wooden. I'll get her to tell us about some of the films that will screen, some 90 films. Every year there's always something for everyone. The festival opens with Virunga and closes with a Brony Tale. There's also a documentary on George Takei. And a few that I've already seen that are just terrific, Massacred for Gold, 1971, and A Fragile Trust, which looks into the Jason Blair controversy that consumed the New York Times 10 years ago. There's always high-quality stuff at DOCSA. Visit doxafestival.ca for tickets and information. Dorothy Wooden is also a film critic at thetie.ca. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Dorothy Wooden. Ms. Wooden, good morning.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I'm a big fan of your work at the Tie.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, no, you forget sometimes because it's online that there's some great writing on there. I mean, you and Shannon and Burgess, but your pieces on film. I mean, what I like about them is that they're not short, 500-word film reviews. You know, they're actually very thoughtful pieces, not just about whatever film you've just seen. But life in general, almost.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about the Tie is, you know, you can sort of have full expanse or, you know, to sort of roam free, I guess, as it were. So yeah. It's funny because they had their 10th anniversary party just a couple of weeks back.
Right.
And I realized it had actually been that long, 10 years writing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of a nice, you know, the fact that it's still trucking.
Yeah,
and
I guess DOCSA, this is its 13th year, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, have you been there from the beginning, or?
No, not from the beginning, actually. I basically got involved with DOCSA as a volunteer on the screening committee, because the woman who founded the festival, her name was Chris Anderson, and she was originally from Winnipeg, and then she moved here in, I think, the late 90s. And the very first festival was in 2000, so I came along a little bit later, and I was working with VIF at the time, just putting together the program guide and writing, you know, a million gazillion film notes, and then kind of knew about DOCSA primarily as a film critic and had followed their programming, and so when I was, you know, still working with VIF, I just called her up one day, and I said, you know, I really like your festival, and, you know, you never need anyone to screen films for you. And she said, oh, yeah, come on down. And so that was basically kind of how it started. And I just was on the screening committee for a number of years and then was on the board and then chaired programming. And then I guess it was 2010 where she said, it's funny because, you know, in Vancouver, you always think people in arts organizations staying until basically, you know, they cart them out by their boot heels. And she's like, well, I'm going to step down, so you should apply for this job, so, and which took me completely by surprise, because I kind of thought, you know, she was there basically until, you know, for the long haul. And so I said, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, I started in the fall of 2010, and the first festival was in 2011, and so this is coming up on their fourth year as director of programming.
So when there are 90 films or so being screened this year, how many do you have to see and have, you know, to get to 90?
Oh, a whole lot.
Yeah.
Probably about 1,200.
Really?
I'd say, yeah. I mean, you tend to lose track after a while.
I'll bet,
Because films come to DOCSA in a couple of different ways. Because we do an open call every year, which goes out in the early part of October. And that's basically, you know, open to anybody in the world who wants to send us their film. And we've always tried to keep, because some festivals, the submission fees are quite high, but we always wanted to, you know, maintain a degree of accessibility for people, you know, who don't have $100 for, you know, a submission fee. So it's always been pretty cheap. So 15 for Canadians and 20 for internationals. So... And a lot of films actually come to DOCSA that way. So, I mean, the raw submissions, I think, are sometimes where you really find a genuine surprise. And Massacred for Gold was actually one of them this year, funnily enough, because I first saw the film at the Copenhagen Festival earlier in the year, and I thought, oh, you know, it was such a great piece of work, and we were familiar familiar with Tim Heckert because he, in 2012, we opened the festival with Air 71, and he actually played live at that event mm-hmm. at the church on Burrard Street, mm-hmm. St. Andrews Wesley, which was that was a very, very interesting event. Kind of, you know, the sort of some of the documentary stalwarts were like, we hate this. And the sort of younger folk were like, we love this. So it kind of broke down a little bit on generational lines. But he's the composer for Massacre for Gold. So, and I didn't actually know that until I was looking to book the film. And I was like, oh, that's great. So,
yeah.
And they're going to be here for that screening.
Oh, really?
Of the film. Yeah, because it's an extraordinary, not just an extraordinary story, but I think a really, really interesting way of telling it.
Exactly, yeah.
It does have that quality of you know, like a story told around a campfire where it's very atmospheric and, you know, you're listening to it as much as you're watching the film.
Yeah, it's a mesmerizing thing. I mean, I put it on just thinking, you know, I'll watch it and you know, to prepare for all this. And I was really drawn into it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the thing about Doxa. There are a lot of films. It's astonishing the quality of films that go through the festival. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but have you noticed that the quality of documentaries has grown over the last few years?
Yep.
Yeah.
I really have. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the whole time that I've been involved with Doxa, essentially, it's kind of kept pace with changes that are happening in this broader documentary mm-hmm. world, essentially. So you've seen people really try different things, and some of the films that specifically this year that are the most fascinating, and Massacred for Gold being one of them, you know, they're taking chances, they're, you know, incurring some risk in terms of their storytelling and what they are trying to do. And I, you know, as a programmer, that's kind of the most exciting thing that can happen sometimes, is you see a film that defies description and defies kind of easy classification. And I mean, sometimes you run into, it's always interesting because we have these conversations at the programming level, and even sometimes, you know, at in previous juries where people will say, well, this is great film, but this is not a documentary. And I kind of think, well, but it kind of forces you to consider or reconsider, rather, what a documentary means, essentially.
Yeah.
And one of my absolute favorite films this year is called Bloody Beans, and it won the documentary award at Copenhagen this year and is screened, you know, and mostly in documentary festivals. But there are lots of critics who come out and say, this is a terrific film, but this is not a documentary. And the filmmaker herself has sort of said, well, documentaries, you know, yes, they can document events and history mm-hmm. and facts and that kind of stuff, but they can also document, you know, emotions, essentially, and atmosphere. And so she makes the argument that this film is a documentary precisely on that basis. And what she does, I mean, it's just ridiculously gorgeous, for one thing, and that's one of the most compelling things about it. But again, it's a film that just really, you know, breaks down all boundaries, and in so doing, kind of, you know, is essentially really true to itself. So the gist of the story is mm-hmm. it's a retelling of the Algerian War for Independence against the French, as sort of embodied in this group of street kids who basically decide that they're sick of the food that they have, which is the horrible red beans,
mm-hmm.
and they decide they're gonna stage this midnight raid on the French barracks and steal all their, you know, chocolate and cheese. And so it's kind of just the story of these kids, but it's also sort of emblematic of this other, you know, historical event kind of retold or reimagined.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so wild and so inventive and so interesting that, you know, to me, I don't care if people don't think it's a documentary. I think, you know, the fact that it's such a great one, an amazing film, kind of supersedes all those categories. So that, I mean, that's how we basically come to decisions, I think, with Doxa, is, you know, is this a great film, fundamentally?
The opening film is Virunga.
Yep.
And I've seen, I guess, the clips of it online and the sort. I haven't seen the film itself, but would you tell us about that? And it is timely, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I don't think even, you know, when I looked back on, because I think I first saw it last November, and when I, you know, when you see a film like that, it's staggering, the story, but then it just kind of kept going. Like, that was the thing that was the most wild about it, was, so Virunga is the oldest national park in the Congo and home to the last population of wild mountain gorillas. But it's also essentially under siege by different forces, one of which is a British petroleum company, who are trying to gain access to the park to do oil exploration, illegally, actually. So Emmanuel de Merode, who is the lead park ranger for the park, was shot the day before the film had its premiere at Tribeca.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because we keep having this conversation, you know, in the office where, you know, when you watch a film, there's sometimes a sense of closure, I guess, in the narrative film.
Yeah.
But in documentary, it's like the story never ends, right? The film just keeps going. And all these people that, you know, that you see this kind of brief little window into their experience through the medium of this film, they're still out there. the film is not over for them. And I guess that really sort of really hit home with what happened to Emmanuel and the fact that, you know, the level of danger, I think, that's incurred is ongoing, right? It's not resolved. It's not different. It's not changed. And the fact that, you know, he almost died, you know, right before the film opened, kind of really made that point explicit. And in some ways, as much as that's a very, very awful, terrible thing, the fact that it was such a huge story and kind of really, I think, crystallized and focused attention on what's going on in Virunga, you know, as horrible as it is, it's at least it kind of shone a really bright spotlight on that story. And it's interesting because there are parallels, I think, to be drawn in the situation there and to other situations all around the globe. And, you know, there was the fact that, you know, BC parks are suddenly open for resource extraction or exploration with very little kind of, you know, public attention being paid to that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think, oh, okay, you know, the battle is being fought in the Congo, but it's also the same battle here, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, sometimes bringing those stories to light really, really requires some serious tenacity and courage to make sure that the story comes to light. And that's what the filmmakers for Virunga really, really, I mean, they took some serious risks, and the people on the ground took some serious risks and are still are. And I guess that's why, for me, it's such an important film, and to give it a platform and to make sure that people are aware of the story was critical.
And that's always struck me about Doxa in the 13 years or so that it's been around. There is a social conscience, mm-hmm. that the films selected have to reflect this place, but also the wider world that we all care about,
yeah.
Essentially.
I mean, you know, you don't want to hit people over the head, so we mm-hmm. try very much to kind of maintain a balance, I think, between dark and light. And so, you know, you'll have a film like Virunga that's very, very, very hard-hitting, but then you'll have a film like, you know, To Be Takei, which is dealing with, you know, equally sort of contentious and, you know, issues, but in a much sort of lighter and more sort of, you know, even kind of really funny way, which
yeah.
I think for humor is always one of the best ways to actually make a point, which is essentially what I think that's George Takei's entire ethos is, you know, you can't laugh. You can't hate somebody if you're laughing with them, essentially.
Yeah. You've seen that. That's an entertaining one, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's in some ways his story is, I mean, he makes some very serious points about, you know, discrimination that he's kind of has suffered as, you know, from the time he was a little kid because he and his family were sent to during World War II. A camp in, I think, the southern U.S. when they basically interned
mm-hmm.
the entire Japanese population. And all through his career, you know, this sort of casual racism that he suffered, and then as a gay man coming out, you know, in support of same-sex marriage. So he's kind of systematically battled, you know, prejudice and whether that's based on, you know, sexuality or race, his entire life. And he, the fact that he's done so with humor and with wit and is, I think, you know, a testimony to his character, but also the way he, that he has adapted to the medium. And, you know,
yeah.
Famous mostly, you know, because of Star Trek, obviously. But he's had this third sort of reincarnation as this internet phenomenon, which is, you know, kind of wild. It's like he's a brand new form of celebrity that he's basically kind of invented. So that's a really, it's a very, very charming film and really sweet and lovely. And so I think, you know, a nice sort of a lighter moment in documentary land.
And the closing film is a Brony Tale. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and it also something spurred on by the internet, isn't it? This obsession with My Little Pony.
It's interesting because there's a lot of films in the festival this year that are dealing very much with online culture.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's a film like Web Junkie, which is about the first, it's basically a rehab center for teenagers in China, and one of, I think, 400 or so that are kind of springing up across the country. Because the Chinese government has come out and said, you know, the number one health threat to teenagers is the internet. And they're basically kind of systematically trying to, you know, deprogram these teenage, primarily boys, actually. I don't think there's a single girl in the whole group. But, I mean, it's interesting because when you watch the film, you feel for both sides of this story because you feel for the kids.
Uh-huh.
But you also feel for the parents, right, because there's this generation that have come of age and they're all single kids and they, this world that they've inherited is so diametrically opposed to what their parents kind of, you know, grew up with. And so their parents are saying, you know, you be a good citizen and study hard and get a job and work all your life and then die. And the kids, like the online world that they've embraced, which, you know, is glamorous and action-packed and video games and all this level of excitement is so much more compelling than what their parents have to offer that you can see why, you know, they would willingly make that choice to live in this other universe, essentially, because it's just so much more exciting and, you know, fun and cool than the sort of regular old dreary world of work and school.
Yeah. The other one that I've been reading about online a lot is, and I forget the name, I should have written it down, were the transcripts from the black boxes?
Yeah, Charlie Victor Romeo.
Charlie Victor Romeo, that's
yeah.
It, yeah. you've seen that, what's that like?
That's a really interesting one, because it's originally, it was based on a stage play, and then they remade it as a 3D documentary. So what they've done is they've taken the actual cockpit transcripts, recordings from the black boxes, and reenacted them. So there's, I think, six different flights that, I mean, a few of them survive, but not all of them do.
Uh-huh.
And they reenact what happens in the cockpit as the flight crew is basically attempting to survive. You know, all these various things that kind of happen. There's different things in each scenario. So, I mean, it's funny because I'm not a good flyer at all.
Yeah.
And I watched this film in just like this existential state of dread. Like I've never been that kind of like just sick to my stomach the whole way through. Because every story is slightly different. And you know at some point, every time you start one of these new kind of episodes, that there's going to be that one terrible moment where you realize, like, but you never know when or where or how it's coming from. So you wait, like in this strange state of kind of suspended animation.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird experience because you're kind of like, you know, you're just on tenterhooks, like in a state of agony until the thing comes to the fore and then they have to deal with it. But you could, because, you know, as an audience member, you know it's coming and you're just waiting. You're waiting to see which, you know, from which direction it appears first. But the thing that really kind of stayed with me about that film, you know, far away from the actual death and destruction of these plane crashes, were just how hard the people fight to survive, and not, you know, just for their own sake, but for the sake of the people that, you know, the their passengers, essentially. And it becomes, it's a very, existential, I guess, for lack of a better word. I mean, it's so much about that quest to survive against everything, you know, against all odds, essentially. And that is, so for me, it becomes really about human courage, I think, in the face of you know, terrible, terrible situation.
One local production, the Emergency Room documentary, which some of us might have seen on the Knowledge Network, that has a screening. That's not the whole thing, is it?
Or? No, it's just it's one episode. So
I see.
It's the one about the full moon. And Kevin Eastwood, who made the film, is going to be there, as well as most of, or a fair amount of, the actual doctors and nurses who were in the film itself. So that'll be more, much more of a kind of interactive experience, I think, because the thing about seeing a film like that is, I mean, and I have this experience too, when you see something that's really compelling, the very first thing you want to do is just talk about it, and tell other people, and, you know, be able to share it, and I think to give, to make sure that that film had the opportunity, and people come to that screening have the opportunity to do that, is kind of what a festival essentially is for, is for that sort of social gathering, for people to come together and you know, basically have this experience together.
Yeah, and so it begins Friday and through to the 11th, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Dorothy, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks for this, and
we'll
look forward to seeing the films this year.
Thanks very much.
DoxaFestival.ca is a website for more. It's programming director Dorothy Wooden joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.